Dude, I can tell you something right now. You're not going to survive like this. You're going through a divorce. You're probably in debt, right? And I'm like, yeah, how'd you know? I could smell it on you. The next week, I made 10 times more money the next week. And I could see the clouds part and I could immediately pay off credit cards and things like that. Because seriously, I was in a financial place and also a mental place where I really felt the world would be better off without me. Like, you know what? If I just didn't have a family, didn't have my son, I probably would consider just not being around because it was so severe. It was just depressing as hell.
Entrepreneurship got that inspiration. Yeah, now I'm just doing it. Working on these projects, my ideas I'm pursuing. No matter what the problem, the solution, I'm proving it. Let's talk about it and open up the dialogue. Contractors telling these stories about how they got it started and how they keep it going. The passion fills the mission. Now we blast it in the orbit. We gone. That's what we grow from. Started with the vision. Make the pitch and knock it out the park like home runs. We keep it moving. Self-belief, no doubt. Pass off the mic to my man's Jim Clout.
Welcome to Contractor Stories. I'm your host, Jim Clout. On the program, I do a deep dive into the lives of the most successful home service contractors in America. Today, Joe Crisera from Service MVP joins me on the podcast. Did you know his father was a plumber and had such an influence on Joe's career? On the podcast today, Joe also revealed that he hit hard times early on and really wasn't sure if he could go on. Joe talks about hard work and how you, as a home service professional, can win in today's environment. And now, here's Joe Crisera.
Jim, thanks for inviting me here. And definitely, let me just start by saying how honored I am because of the effort that you have made to manage my podcast and bring it to a significance in the contracting world. And I keep getting so many people saying that the quality of that podcast and what you're producing there, Jim, both between my content and what your production value is, I think we're a good team that can't be beat. So thank you so much, Jim, for all that effort you made with that. And I'm honored to be on the show. So thank you.
Well, thank you, Joe. It is kind of a team effort when it comes to your podcast because you do produce a great product and then we get to do our stuff on the back end. So it is a collaboration for sure. Many people really are intimate with you because they call you Uncle Joe. Tell us a little bit about the history of the Uncle Joe thing. Even I call you Uncle Joe and I'm pretty sure we're not related.
Well, I think, people always say when I do my training, it's sort of like entertainment, they call it, where it's like a stand-up comedian teaching us how to communicate with clients. Because, I'm really good at teaching. When I heard you had the Contractor Stories podcast, I'm like, dude, that's my superpower. It's like I got so many stories of, crash and burns and things that went wrong and also the things that went right. But, truthfully, those stories that I have is really what built everything that I do. And those stories, I think, is one of the things that creates the Uncle Joe mystique, which is that this guy, is real because nobody could go through that kind of crap unless you went through it. Like, there's nobody who could just make that up or steal it or plagiarize it because it's like, man, that is so like detailed and exactly, and that's exactly what I went through. So I think that's what creates that persona of Uncle Joe is that people feel like here's a guy who's going through, he already went through exactly what I'm going through right now, what I've already gone through as well. And he's come out the other end of it. And he's got a story to tell that can help me pull me to the other side. Kind of like that friendly uncle that puts his arm around you and guides you to do the right thing. Right. And I'm not like the uncle who says, pull my finger, but
No. Yeah.
The other one makes sense. So that's why I try to be guidance, mentoring uncle, not the pull my finger uncle, but that's how I try to do it.
Uncle Joe, not Uncle Buck. Yeah. So.
I've had people say, are you the creepy Uncle Joe? I said, no, I'm the nice uncle that takes you out for ice cream. And then we go play some, I play catch in the front yard with a football at Thanksgiving kind of Uncle Joe. That's the uncle I am. I'm kind of guy that does stuff with you. So if I go to a city and I have a friend there, I'll just call him out of the blue. Hey, what are you doing today? And it's like, let's go out, and things like that. So I just like what I really do is I dive into all the relationships I have as if I am the best friend. I don't know. I say for that moment, I'm your best friend. And then, you know, I try to maintain that. Of course, when I disconnect, I still try to, I give everybody my unconditional friendship no matter what. They can never lose it. But, you know, I just look at it that the relationships I have with other people, such as you and that have elevated me to the status I enjoy today. So I definitely appreciate, I'm full of appreciation and gratitude, honestly, because I had to pinch myself to consider I'm in this position I'm in right now.
You appear to have a lot of gratitude. You constantly put that forth when you talk to people. Almost every time you and I have a conversation, you thank me for what I do for you, and I thank you for what you do for me and everyone else. Let's talk a little bit about the younger Joe. First question is, did you always want to be in home service, in, you know, being a contractor?
That's a good story right there in itself. You know, my dad was a plumber. You know, I grew up as a son of a plumber. He was an ex-Marine, and he got involved with plumbing around 1956, like 2 years before I was born. And by the time I got old enough to start considering a future career, he's like, whatever you do, don't get into plumbing. I could give you some advice. Just don't do this. And so he encouraged me to go to HVAC school. You know, go to HVAC school. You work inside the house. You're not under the crawl space and things like that. Well, little did he know that there's a lot of work that the grinders in HVAC do as well. But no, truthfully, you know, he carried around a lot of cast iron fittings and did a lot of projects like O'Hare. He did O'Hare Airport and the Hancock Center in Chicago. He was part of those construction projects. And so he grinded it out. So he was very proud of me that I first got into HVAC and then started running a business. And then when he saw what I do now, he said, I can't believe somebody could actually do something like this for a living. You know, because if I told him I wanted to do this when I was younger, he would say, there's no way you can make a living on this, right? He would have told me that. But truthfully, he tried to talk me out of it. Truthfully, I wanted to be a musician. I wanted to be in a band. And I actually, right about 15 years old, I started playing music and guitar and bass guitar and keyboard and piano. And I really wanted to get into music. At 12 years old, I think you asked me about 12 years old. Did you ask me about that one yet? Or is that was the question you gave me?
Well, yes. So why don't we go back in time? I often ask this question of our guests because I'm always curious. Who was Joe? You weren't an uncle then for sure. You may have been someone's cousin, right? Who was Joe at about 12 years old?
Well, I wanted to play professional baseball. I loved baseball. When I was 12 years old, we took a vacant field and cut it down with our lawnmowers, and we made our own base paths, like at Three River Stadiums, like second base, third base, and first base, and we mowed it meticulously. And it was just an abandoned field, and we put our own grass as we were kids, and we created our own baseball field, our field of dreams in Mundelein, Illinois, in northern Illinois. And truthfully, I just loved the game of baseball, and of course, I loved watching football. I was not a really good football player, but I thought it was pretty good with baseball, and that's really what I wanted to be at 12 years old. And you know, I definitely was probably just entering my freshman year of high school at the time. I went from a Lutheran school that had a graduating class of 14 people to Mundelein High School, which had a freshman class of 500 people. So we had, and only two people from the Lutheran school I went to Mundelein. So basically I had, you know, 498 people I had to make friends with. And one of the things I did is I ran for class president in my freshman year, even though I just didn't know it. I just said, anybody can do it? Yeah, I'm going to do it. So I looked at high school was like a buffet of all the classes that you could choose, because, you know, all the classes in the Lutheran school were all chosen for me. So I looked at that like a unique buffet of education. And truthfully, a lot of that, what I remember in high school, where I could choose any class I wanted to choose, I love that philosophy, even when I create classes today, to make sure that people can see, hey, let's find the solution that's right for you. And that kind of goes back to that time, actually, you know?
So it's interesting, because today you teach, you coach, train people. It's interesting when you talk about going into high school, all of that variety you get to choose from. But let's skip a little bit forward today, since you brought it up, because you are America's service sales coach. You are the Uncle Joe. You're the guy. From what you learned as a child with education, are you using any of that in today? Because you are an educator.
Well, you know, a lot of the stories that, you know, one of my biggest influences was Pastor Kruger. Pastor Harold Kruger was just like, great guy, great gentleman. And I look back at all the lessons I learned from him, and he would just kind of guide me in the gentlemanly fashion. Then I have my grandfather. He was from Luxembourg, Grandpa Emil, his name was. And he was full of like the Uncle Joe-isms I have today, like, you know, if you can't be on time, be early. That all came from Grandpa Emil. He owned a tavern in Mundelein called Emil's Continental Tap. And I used to have to sling beer cases and stuff like that. But he taught me about accountability. I used to have to, and when I was going into high school at 12 years old, I would go take my bike every morning through the snow and everything, about a mile and a half, and to go in the tavern. And I would have to clean the bathrooms and clean the floor and do the glasses before I went to school every morning. So he'd pay me like, I think it was like $15 a week or something like that. This is back in 1972, right?
Yeah.
And so I was like, oh, 1970. So I was like, okay, did it all. But he was the kind of guy where if he'd pick a glass out of the bunch I cleaned, and if there was like a spot on it, he'd put all the glasses back in the sink and said, do it again. And I'm like, why? He goes, if you can't do it right the first time, don't do it at all. It was like one of those Uncle Joe-isms. And then, you know, if I cleaned the bathroom and missed a spot, he'd throw the bucket on the floor and say, clean it up the right way this time. You know, and he would just, he wouldn't accept anything other than perfection, right? So he was a perfectionist. Thank God I don't have that much perfectionism he does, but because I'd have a little more tolerance. Like I don't rip up people's option sheets and say, you screwed it up, do it again. I just say, hey, you got to fix that or that. I'm kind of a little more user-friendly than he was. But definitely, you know, I used to think he was crazy. And there's a lot of, I felt negative a lot of times when I first talked to him. But I realized how much love he must have had to try to guide me the right direction. I think we look back and it's a different kind of, a different feeling that I had when I look back than it was at the time I was experiencing it, right?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So was he the biggest influence in your life at that time, or did someone else at a young age influence you, your father?
You know, I think the service, the heart of service part of it is probably from my mother. She, at the church, she'd be the person who did all the chicken dinners. Anytime somebody died and had a funeral, she'd say, oh, we got to go make the food. She'd have the food ready for the right after all the funerals at the church. So anybody who was getting their funeral there, she would make a complimentary meal with ham sandwiches, turkey, and all the deli spread that she would make herself and get it all arranged. So she ran a pig roast, Jim, where the pig roast paid for the air conditioning in the church. They built this church. It was like back when I was probably about 18 or whatnot, but they couldn't afford air conditioning. So she wound up doing a pig roast, and the pig roast still lives on today as a legacy. The biggest money-making thing that church does to get revenue to get the church open is that pig roast. And she started it. And I said, you should write a book and sell it to the other Lutheran churches because it's a great success story. She said that church averaged $132,000 for every pig roast because they would get the pigs donated and stuff like that. So what I learned from her is that she's the kind of person, my mom, where if she saw somebody was down their luck, she would make Thanksgiving dinner. She'd make one for us and make one for them, even though we weren't rich at all. My dad was struggling. He'd be laid off half the year and things like that. So we were struggling financially. But she still found a way to help other people. And she'd invite people who were going through hard times into our home for Thanksgiving and Christmas and things like that. She always had the open house philosophy. So when her mom had diabetes and had several of her limbs, both her legs were amputated, and she had a stroke, several strokes. But whenever she had eight brothers and sisters, and when everybody's talking about putting her in a home because they can't take care of her, my mom said, nope, we're putting a hospital bed in our home and we're taking care of her. So she took her in. So that's the kind of, you know, what gives me the spirit of service, I think, is that, man, I can't even compare to anything my mom has done. I mean, I'm starting to get teary right now, just a little bit even talking about it truthfully, because she had sacrificed. So, and if there's anybody listening from the church or back in the day, they can attest to it, that woman had a heart of gold. And no matter what she thought about anything else, that if she saw somebody struggling, they wouldn't go hungry. They wouldn't go without clothes. She made sure that they were taken care of, right? Well, my mom and dad, they're just pure American. My grandmother, my dad's side, was from Italy. She's Italian. She was from right near Rome. And my grandfather from my dad's side was from Sicily. And then my mom's side, they're German and Irish and They were not immigrants either. They were pure Americans, and they worked in factories in the south side of Chicago, grinding it out on a day-to-day basis with 8 kids in a small house with 2 bedrooms. I don't even know how they did it. But truthfully, that's the kind of thing that I'm like, man, you know, the love for your family you have to have to be able to raise 8 children in a house that's probably, I don't know, 1,600 square feet. At the moment, it's like you're living in the attic. 2 rooms are in the attic, but there's no bathroom up there either, right? 1 bathroom downstairs for 8 people and plus the parents. I don't even know how they did it, truthfully. And I see the sacrifice. I think that's some of the thing I see that my mom and her mom and my grandfather, they did a lot to sacrifice for other people so that, you know, we, my sister and I and our family, the younger people in the family could have a better, easier road. And that definitely, I try to pay that forward to all the clients and people that I work with. I think people get a sense of that when they meet me, like, this guy really cares about you. He's not just some dude trying to make money off of me type of thing, right? If people get that sense, that I'm just, I mean, there is a financial obligation, don't get me wrong, but bottom line, you know, I always start out by making sure people get my best service free to make sure we can help them. And then, you know, of course, you want me to continue that service. It would be an additional expense or investment, if you want to call that, right? So, but I always try to give my best effort first, just to make sure that people see value in what we do. The only way you can see value in what I do is by trying it in a way. Does that make sense?
Joe, throughout your life, and this could be either a personal or business question, what's been your biggest win? Single most biggest win?
That's a good question. The biggest win, probably when I started my business, it was a lot of stress, and I wouldn't wish anything on the way I started my business out and the way anybody who lives today, but most likely it would have killed them. You know, the first 6 years of my business was just not good, right? It was just, I just used my own instinct. I went into business because I ran out of bosses that I thought were smart enough to work for. Like, I couldn't find somebody I respected enough to work for. So I'm like, I'm just going to start my own business. And my first wife was very entrepreneurial. She always wanted to start a business. So we did it. So I was kind of dragged into it a little bit. And then once I get into something, I try to do it like my grandfather taught me, like, with excellence. And so I'm like, okay, we're going to do this. And, you know, we did turn that business around. Probably the biggest achievement was taking a company that was $250,000 in debt. And I also had to pay off my ex-wife that she had $221,000 for the business at the time. So I had basically almost $500,000 in debt. I was debt for, by the time I learned about the system, you know, the premium mid-range economy options, how to take that friendship I already knew how to make and leverage that friendship into a result financially where everybody felt good, but they were willing to pay for it as well. That's probably the biggest thing that I'd say changed everything, the biggest game changer, because by December of January 1991, I was about $500,000 in debt total, but I was debt free by December of 1994 based on the principles of offering things that made me frankly uncomfortable. Like, man, I would never just change the ductwork in a house, but here I am. If people say, I want just an air conditioning unit, I'm like, well, we're going to give you a premium option of changing the furnace, AC, and the ductwork, then just the furnace and AC, and then just the AC at the bottom. Kind of started that way. My average sale went from $1,500 to almost $9,000 in about one month period based on one of my customers who told me what to do with that and how to do that, manage those options. So that was probably the biggest financial impact, and probably just the big, it's like the seeds of what I do still today, right? Everything that the core principles, the pure motive service part of it comes from my family, I think. But the technical part of it, the science of pricing, science of connecting, and there's a science to all that stuff. And that I got from a friend named Dave Muller, who was a client of mine who shot straight with me and said, dude, you got to start pricing this stuff right. You're not charging enough. So what customer would ever tell you you're not charging enough? He goes, dude, I can tell you something right now. You're not going to survive like this. You're going through a divorce. You're probably in debt, right? And I'm like, yeah, how'd you know? I could smell it on you. And he's like, you know, you got to get yourself, make these premium mid-range economy out. He sold pharmaceuticals, this guy. And he showed me how to do that. And it was like a switch went off. That's the cool thing about what I learned then is that the next week I made 10 times more money. The next week I learned that. And I can see the clouds part and I can immediately pay off credit cards and things like that. Because seriously, I was in a financial place and also a you know, mental place where I really felt the world would be better off without me. Like, you know what, if I just didn't have a family, didn't have my son, I probably would consider just not being around because it was so severe. It was just depressing as hell. But then, you know, once I saw the way to do it, it's interesting. It's like, I was like, I had no doubt after about the second week I started doing this, that this was the path, the road to enlightenment, if you will, that got me out of that darkness. And every day was just more and more momentum, positive momentum. So I would say that's probably the biggest win I had, is learning that part of it, because that then gave me so many opportunities. Even when I got into debt, when I gave my final payment to one of my vendors, they said, "How did you get out of debt? You owe us like $80,000. And I would say I still owe $64,000 when I gave them a $64,000 check. And they go, "How did you get that money? Did somebody buy you?" And I said, "No, I learned how to do premium mid-range economy options." And they go, "Show me how you do that." So I showed them and they go, "You know what? We got like 70 people who are in debt. Could you help them?" So they paid me, the manufacturers, not the manufacturer, but the suppliers. One of the suppliers said, "Yeah, you go to these places and get them out of debt. Teach them that what you learned, and I'll pay you money." So they wound up paying me money to go out and help other dealers that were in debt like I was. And I didn't even realize how many people were having problems until they told me that, right? And then I realized that, man, this is like a business of its own. This is the business I really love doing. And that's how I got myself into doing the training and stuff that I do today. Make sense?
Yeah. So yeah, you're the Dave Ramsey of contractors. I get it now, right? Because Dave Ramsey helped people get out of debt. Joe, how old were you at this time when you had this big win? How old were you?
Well, that was in 1991 to 94, those three years. So I would say, what would that be? 88 would be 30 years old. So about 30, early 30s, you know, something like that.
Yeah, which actually is still relatively young and enabled you to then springboard to where you are today. That was a huge turning point, because that's when you first became a coach, obviously.
Well, you know, that's why I say, whenever I hear people going through struggles, I kind of laugh, like, I think I'm going to shut this business down. And I'm like, dude, you're so far from that. What are you talking about? The IRS isn't even at your door yet. That's the only people who can shut your business down is the IRS. Because I experienced one of my bosses had a red sticker on the door. Okay, you're shut down. There you go. That's the only way to get the business shut down. I said, as long as people need your service, it's impossible to shut down. Because even if you're in debt, people still want to, they see value in the service you're offering, and they'll still give you money to continue moving forward. Now, it's up to you how you invest that money to get out of that dark place that you're in right now. But people always overplay it, like, you know, like, "Oh my God, Joe, you can't believe what I'm going through." I said, "I probably can." I said, you know, so it's the good part about that, when I look back at it now, all the stuff I went through, that my first wife and the divorce and things like that, and the therapy I took and that stuff, and then, you know, getting out of that debt financially. So all that stuff there and that 3-year period was very instrumental in the way I treat people today, you know, as a little bit of therapy, because you got to change the mindset before I can tell people a process. They got to make sure the mindset is changed where they can be an optimist about their possibilities. Because try to teach somebody who's completely negative what they do, they're going to give up on themselves. They're not in a place where they can get a foothold in a way. Does that make sense? So that the thing about the divorce was like really instrumental, because the therapy and stuff I took was like, yeah, I saw the way people get helped in a different way. And I'm like, you know, I really like to help people like this guy is helping me right now mentally, you know, get into a place of enlightenment rather than a place of darkness, right? And then the financial stuff that I learned from Dave Muller was good. And then I learned about the 7 Habits and Jack Canfield and, you know, all the greats, you know, it was at Napoleon Hill and, you know, people like that, that I was introduced to that based on what Dave Muller taught me. And, you know, and 7 Habits of, I was a big 7 Habits of Highly Effective People fan. I actually went to a class in 1992 where Stephen Covey was actually teaching the class. Imagine how, yeah, I was there, right? I still can't believe to pinch myself, because he's like the godfather of responsibility, I call it. Just have a lot there. And I was just very fortunate that I was, so many great people too. You know, when Contractor 2000 wanted to start that group, I was invited in Buffalo Grove at the ABC Plumbing, who was instrumental in the group. I have to thank Brian and Gordon Schroll, who actually bought my business eventually, you know, the contracting business I had. But Gordon and Brian, somebody invited me to a meeting at their place, and Frank Blau, George Brazil, Maurice Mayo. It's like the, what do you call it, Mount Rushmore, the early fathers of best practice in this business. You know, we're all there at that meeting. And I was just a doofus that was getting out of debt, trying to get out of debt. And then Frank Bobby was like, what do you charge per hour? I'm like, oh, 75. And he's like, are you an idiot? And he's like, you know, Frank, if you know Frank Blau, he tore me a new one. All right. And I'm like, I'm willing. I'm like, yeah, you're right, Frank. I am an idiot. And so, but the truth was that it was those powerful moments, those meetings like that, that was like that 3-year period. I was just blessed. I had so many, if you do believe in God or don't believe in God, I have to admit there had to be some sort of a divine interference, thing that came in and just kind of all these opportunities. Of course, Dave opened the door to say, hey, this is possible. Let's make sure you get your mindset right. And then everything I saw was like things that were there before, I just didn't see them. But now that Dave told me about the possibilities, it opened those doors that they were there all the time. I just didn't even recognize they were existing. Make sense? I was really involved with the Dale Carnegie stuff back in that time frame too, about how to win friends and influence. I went through actually a 3-year training on that. I'd have to give that some credit for the Mecca. I do a thing called Magic Moments, which is really sort of like the same kind of philosophy that the Win Friends and Influence People, Dale Carnegie classes were. You know, the Take Responsibility from Stephen Covey kind of emerged there. Truthfully, I'll tell you a story. Jim, I went to a speaking coach here in Los Angeles. In 2005, we moved to Los Angeles. I said, I got to go to a speaking coach. Got to learn how to do better. And so I felt like I mumbled and stuff too much. And he goes, so the guy I hired, his name was David Kagan. He was the coach for Ted Danson and I forget who else, a couple other famous people who are really, Bob Newhart, for instance, he did him. And I'm like, wow, these are some really, this guy must know his shit. So it was $8,000 just for like 6 sessions, right? And I was like, oh, just do it. My wife and I got to scrape the money together. We did it. And he told me, he goes, go ahead and give me your best stuff, Joe. And I get up and start acting like Tony Robbins. And he goes, stop. And he said, what? He goes, who's that? He goes, I was just talking to a guy that was all heart a few seconds ago. I really liked you doing, but now when you're talking to me, I kind of hate you. You're acting like an a-hole. He told me, you know? So he said, why are you changing who you are? And I said, I just think I'm trying to motivate people, Dave. And he goes, no, stop that. He goes, just be yourself, be authentic. You know, you're already a guy that people are going to like. I liked you when I first met you, but I stopped liking you when you start talking because you're trying to be somebody you're not. He goes, just be yourself and tell the stories you would. Now, we're going to go over in the next six lessons how to enunciate more clearly and how to get that Jim Clark veneer that we all wish we had. Those great pipes that he's got, right? So definitely, you know, he taught me how to do more of that and how to speak from the diaphragm and things like that. But truthfully, he said, knock off the other stuff because that's not going to work. You know, he said, and truthfully, that was one of the best advices I ever got in training people and things like that, right?
Well, yeah, you've got to be your authentic self. People can smell you a mile away if you're a fake. People don't like fakes. They won't respond well to them. All right, here's a question that gets some people kind of rattled a bit because they really have to think and no one really wants to talk about this. What's your biggest regret, Joe?
Well, you know, truthfully, biggest regret. Mm-hmm. That's a good question. I would say, a regret would mean that I made a decision that something I had wish I could change. Is that what we're kind of, that would be how we define regret? That I made a decision, I wish I could go back and change it. Yep. Probably the only thing I regret is I didn't realize that when I was in high school, I probably could have dated any girl I wanted to. If I learned how to talk to them and just was honest with them instead of trying to act like somebody I wasn't, like David Kagan told me years later. So truthfully, I probably could have, you know, dated a girl when I was in high school. I didn't have any dates in high school at all. I was the kind of guy who just was frightened of approaching a woman. But, you know, probably I would not have any problem with that today if I was in that position. If I go back and talk to my 12-year-old self, I would definitely whisper a few moves, that some magic moment moves and things like that. Probably you would start with that, right? So
yeah, if I could go back to high school now, I'd be a player.
Yeah, right. No, right. It is selling. You're selling people on the idea of, hey, choose the right crowd to hang out with. And, you know, truthfully, I do have One regret in business, go back to that again, was my first marriage not being there enough for my family. Truthfully, I think if I take full responsibility, if I look at this the right way, I mean, my first wife had a mental condition, and so it was difficult to deal with. But truthfully, I don't think I was there to support that and really nurture it the way I could have, because I was so busy trying to get that business afloat and keep it working while I was going into debt and things like that. So my first son, who's 35 years old now, is actually in prison right now, mm-hmm. and he is going to be getting out hopefully very soon. And he's learned a lot of dark lessons. I think I'm not saying that the way I parented him got him there, but I think, you know, some of the things that, you know, I wish I had been there more for him in that part of it there, right? That's one thing. But my second son, my first son, always, I always apologize to him when I talk about the way my second son, I deal with him. He's like, yeah, I know, you just didn't know at the time. I said, yeah, I didn't know how to really be a good parent. And, you know, really what it is that, you know, the sales system we have, the pure motive sales system, is very similar to parenting in a way. You're guiding people to find a solution that you know will be more productive for them, right? So I'm not trying to sell it to you. I'm just trying to help you see what I see about why the one solution would be better than the other, or why my company would be better than another company, right? So, you know, so from that standpoint, that's why I approach it. I look at it like I got a sales job every day. I go home. I got to make sure that I got to sell him on the credibility that I'm there for him, and that I can communicate, that the questions I ask him aren't just fake surface questions, that they're real. Like I'll say, how'd it go today at school? It went good. I said, okay, how'd it really go? Oh, geez, Dad. And then he tells me, like it's a little thing we got going where I just asked him the question on the surface. Then I said, okay, how's it really going, Wyatt? And he goes, ugh. I tell you, it was a tough day, Dad. And I was like, tell me what happened. And then he's like, I said, off the record. He goes, okay, then. I'm using the sales system that we teach to kind of open them up a little bit. And, you know, truthfully, you know, connecting is not just starting with clients, but, you know, I'd say you should always practice with your own family and see if you can open up them, not just your children and wife, but even other people. You know, you go to a Christmas party and things like that with your family, you know, ask them questions they wouldn't expect you to ask, you know, because as we grow personally and we are able to be more self-aware ourselves, that should bring a self-awareness to other people. And I say, what I did is growing up, I was very sarcastic because I just didn't know how to deal with people. And I think I replaced sarcasm, what I call unconditional support. So when I go to a family function, the same person I would have said, what an idiot that guy is. I'm now saying, you know, like that guy needs a hug. So that's kind of like the way I've changed it, right? So I've completely changed. In that period from the 1991 to 1994, that all was kind of the building blocks for what I believe in today. Like, I don't believe in sarcasm. I don't believe in arguing about politics and that kind of stuff. I believe that everybody's got a valid point of view. If they're believing in it, if somebody believes in something, there's got to be a truth to it in a way. Yet I think it would be nicer if people could sell each other on that way, that they're trying, the motivation is correct. Because I think that's what we have in society today, is people who question the motivation of the other side. And I think that's not ever going to be productive. It's never going to bring people together. And that's one thing I do see, you know, that I'd love to be instrumental in helping build that bridge, because I think there's a lot to build on there.
Joe, do you believe leaders must be readers?
Well, yes, I believe that the biggest investment that you can make that's always a sure thing is the investment in yourself and your own education. So I always say, why wait for your boss to send you to a seminar? You should find seminars and send yourself there. You should read books. If you're not doing, you know, you should be the minimum, if you're a normal person, I'd say $300 to $500 a year on reading material on Amazon or wherever you're going to buy it, Barnes & Noble or something like that. Yes, if you consume it on Kindle or audiobook, I think that you should be investing in yourself, because when you invest in yourself, it's a sure investment. It definitely always pays back, because you're the one gaining growth and knowledge, and you can literally change. You look back and see how I am now compared to what I was back in the day. There's some similarities, you know, but there's a lot of differences too. And I'm not ashamed of it, because I just did the best I could with what I knew, what I had at the time. It's like my grandpa saying, just do the best you can with what you have, right? And so I look at it that way. It's a philosophy I believe in. But I do see that if people read, whether they read it or listen to it, definitely need or watch it on YouTube even. I think that you're investing in yourself in a way. That time, I think everybody should take that time every day to invest a little bit of knowledge in yourself. And I think it pays back, you know, I'm a testimony to that. I'll read a book one time, Jim, and I'll be teaching the same material. Whatever I learned in that book, you'll be hearing a story from that in a seminar the next day. That's the way I am.
Yeah. And when you read something and then you teach it, you as the teacher actually learn more. It becomes more ingrained into your brain. So you're coming out with a new book. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, it's called What Should We Do? Is the name of the book. And the book is going to be coming out in March of 2024. And I'm really proud of it. It's really, we had Helena Boucher, she wrote Tommy's first book. She helped Tommy write the Home Service Millionaire, right? That book he wrote. And she's doing collaborating with me for the last year. She's watched probably, I don't know, 500 hours of video and done about 58 to 60 hours of interview time with me. And then we have her, she's expert. I mean, when I read this material, it's like, man, it just sounds exactly like the way I talk, with the way she captured the voice. Is just amazing. So when I do that thing where I do the audiobook, I can tell I'm not going to have a problem because she captured the way I talk inside that book in a great way, I think, you know. So I'm really proud of that. And it's going to cover everything from, you know, the basics of the laws of persuasion all the way into everything we do, the benchmarks that I believe in, you know, making a friend, making the options, the science of pricing, all that kind of stuff is going to be in the book. So I hope that I really think this will be not just the great business card for Service MVP and me, but I think it will help thousands of other people. I really think it will help people relate in a way that's personalized and customized. So when people create solutions, people don't feel sold. They feel like they sold themselves on the person that they're buying from. That's really the idea behind the book is when I say, what should we do? It's like, you should be sold on this already. You should be sold on me and that I'm here to help you and sold on these solutions that they're ready to go. So you got me, you got the solutions. You got you, we got a problem, what should we do? It's kind of like, you know, you give the person the dignity to choose for themselves. That's really the fundamental of the book is really based on choices. And that's really how I believe now in everything. Even parenting, I believe in giving your kid choices. Like, well, you got one, you saw in that role play, right? Hey, you got a choice of doing your homework now and we'll have some fun together and play some basketball later. Or you do it later on your own, or you just not do anything right now, and I'll just have to read a book instead. No, I don't want to do that. Okay, so what should we do? Let's do the homework now. Can I tell you a story?
Yeah.
He is now, he's in Venice Beach High School at the Venice Gondoliers, or the Gondos. He is running for school president.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy?
Imagine that.
Some of it permeated, even though I didn't think I was getting through to him, but something must have happened. I was like, wow. So he's going to find out today, actually, where he stands. There's three people he's running against, and he is running for the president. Isn't it crazy?
Win, lose, or draw, it is still a great experience, right? Just to be campaigning.
Are you crazy? That's why I'm so proud of him, that he is believing in himself enough to, you know, truthfully, with him, I didn't try and correct him on the things I did before my first time around with parenting, like his hair, the way what he eats. I was like, that's something you have to learn on your own. I'll just tell you the facts, but you got to learn on your own. He did. He's coming around to that now. Everything. He's 6'6". He's 14 years old. He's 6'6" and weighs like 285. So but everybody says he should be a football player, a basketball player, but he wants to join cheerleading instead. He wants to join fencing. He was a face of fencing. So that's, so I'm like, yeah, whatever you want to do. I said, I'm not here to guide you anywhere. It's like the world's like a buffet. I told him, you got to pick the dishes that are right for you. Right.
Well, let people follow their dream. Do not live anyone else's dream. One more final question. We were talking about books, your book. Final question. With all the books you've read over the years, what single book would you recommend to a home service professional to read?
I would say, if I was going to say just the business, for a business part of it, I would have to say The E-Myth is probably, I was an E-Myth junkie with Michael Gerber. I had tapes, a set of 24 tapes, and I wore out four sets of those tapes. I had my Ford Bronco, and I would put the tapes in there every time I drove somewhere. And I just wore, eventually became an E-Myth mastery coach. So that's where we created the systems in our business. I learned how, not just how to sell, but how to create a system now where that system we had that's really where I can sell now. That system became something I could produce as a sale, something I could sell, because the system is, I always say this to everybody, the people, you're looking for good people, you're looking for good equipment, stop it. The system is the solution. You know, the system helps you build people. The system helps you buy the right equipment for the right application. It all kind of comes together in a system when people do things right. So you say, well, how does a guy get like Victor or Ishmael or these people who grow huge businesses like their Tommy Mello, right? And it's because Tommy said, he goes, hey, Tommy, how do you get to be a like $40 million company? He goes, well, write this down. Not by yourself. It's with a system that you get people to follow, and that is how you do it. And I truly believe in that. That's where when I hear people like Tommy, he's like a brother from another mother, because it's like we both believe in the same thing, which is the system. And we may not have the exact same systems, but definitely we believe in a system, in any kind of system, like Al Levy does. Dan Antonelli's got a system for way he, you can see the look, the Dan Antonelli look has a certain system behind it that you can see that. That's Dan Antonelli when you see a truck that's painted a certain way, right? They're all different, but there's something about it that you can tell is Dan Antonelli, right?
It's got his fingerprint on it. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, you just tell what it is. It's hard to believe, hard to know what it is. You can probably put it in a microscope, but there's something about it. There's something about Tommy, something about me. And you can see it's systemized. It's not something that is changing from, I think that's what I would say to trust when you're as a contractor, who I would trust. I would trust people who have systems, who teach systems, rather than people who try to teach behaviors or skills or things like that. Make sense?
Michael Gerber keeps coming up. It's one of our guests, plural, favorite book. And for everyone who's viewing this and or listening, we're going to put a link in the notes of this podcast for you to order that book on Amazon. Plus, Joe Crisera is going to give us some cool links to put in here as well to contact him, and probably some freebies from him, because Joe loves giving away free stuff.
Well, True Grit is a interactive learning escape room event where we have 24 escape rooms based on individual lessons for the office staff, for leadership, for the field, for call-by-call management, all these things we have. So I invite everybody there next year. We're also going to be speaking at the Profit Rocket event. Victor Rancourt has invited me there, and I'm going to do an office staff thing for creating a reward system for the office, 5 reward systems that you could give office bonuses. And I've got one called What Should We Do, which is sort of like the 3 lessons of how to connect, how to build the options that are customized, and how to close the deal. How to do it in 1 hour session I'm doing there. We've got, yeah, I'm going to be I'll be at Pantheon. If everybody's going to Pantheon, the Service Titan will be there. That an event. I look forward to that meeting. I think like 2,000 people are going to be there. So I'm looking to see what that looks like. So, and, you know, just our normal, then we have our other total immersion events. We have live training for service, call by call, office staff training. If you go to tisummit.com, you could do that. Is now the time I drop the offer to get people to say, do something for free for them? Yeah, so what I would do is we have a new thing called Brunch and Learns, and we got this from Edgar, I want to get it right, Morozian, I think his name is, from Restorers. He approaches, we start doing a thing for him called Brunch and Learns, where we go out and meet with contractors for 1 hour at a breakfast meeting between 7 and 8 or 8 and 9 or something like that we've done. And so it's been very successful, and it's really helped us to find clients who need the help, who can get that service for free without having to pay for it initially. So they can make money, enough money where they can afford to actually hire us, really is what we do. So the Brunch and Learn, I would say anybody who would like that, a 1 hour Zoom meeting with your team, if you want to schedule that with our staff, you can go on our text line if you want to. And that line, you would think I would know it, right? Company text line. I don't want you to text me, because I'll never remember what we're doing with that. Let me see if I can get there. But if you want to go to our text line, that text line is 626-325-0860. 626-325-0860, and just put down Brunch and Learn, and we will have one of our coaches. We have several service MVP coaches who can do those 1 hour meetings with your team. We'll give you a workbook. We will co-brand it. We have other partners that we're trying to hope to get involved who would want us to do a Brunch and Learn for their contractor. So if you have anybody else who is interested in a partnership with us, who wants us to speak for an hour to their contractors, give them a sales boost. Listen to this. The average company that does that 1 hour meeting for free increases revenue by the next week to 78% higher just by the Brunch and Learn 1 hour. Isn't it crazy?
That's incredible.
At the Brunch and Learn, also, we give you a month to the Service MVP app, which is now our the gold standard. Service MVP app is like Trainual with content that's already in it from us. So it's got the Service MVP office field leadership and everything in it. Hundreds of probably 50 courses that you can take that are specifically designed for business systems. And then we have hundreds of lessons that are individual lessons that you can just watch and learn. All the podcasts that Jim has produced are up there on that platform as well. So definitely I would give everybody 30 days of Service MVP with that Brunch and Learn, just so you can get a taste of what we do. And I think we're kind of like the puppy dog. Once we give them to you, you can't get rid of them. It's kind of like that. That's my puppy dog clothes, they call that one. Give them the puppy dog and give them a hug and then say, okay, try to live without that. You know, it's like, yeah, I can't. You're right. Let's keep it. So it's kind of cool. That's really how we get most of our business, by trying to give people value first and then make sure that they feel value before we even ask them. Then they ask us if they can buy. We try not to even ask them. We just say it's available if you want that type of thing. Make sense?
Well, sure. The best way to sell is not to sell. It's to educate, make them feel comfortable, and have them buy from you. It's that simple.
Thank you. I appreciate this. This is a great experience and a little therapeutic for me. Reaching back into memory banks, I had some dark places in the memories there. But thank you for putting a shining light on those times, right?
Yeah.
Just a quick note here, guys. I want to ask you for a favor. My guests and I really want to bring you, the home service professional, the best quality podcast possible. I just have one simple request. Would you please subscribe to this podcast right now? In return for your favor, I promise to bring you the best of the best in the home service world. Guests like Billy Stevens, Tommy Mello, Ismael Valdez, Al Levy, and so many more. Thank you for listening, and I promise to bring you much more just like this.
Yeah.
Joe, let's talk about your book. So what should we do?
That's a good one, Jim. Well, you know, we should learn about peer motive service, which is right in the beginning of the book. We should learn about how to connect with our clients, which we go over how to do that in the book. We learn the science of pricing, how to manage the projects, how to make sure we eliminate your competition and differentiate your services. This is 460 pages. Goldmine. Or if you want to do Audible, Jim, we have the Audible version. And I'd say, seriously, the Audible, I was listening to it myself and I was amazed. We have a major studio here in Santa Monica, California that did the audio book for me. And I read it myself and it took me 6 weeks because there's 10 hours of Audible content on this thing. So definitely, there's no shortage of information on helping you and your service business in that book. And I think everybody will benefit from reading it or listening to it.
It's no surprise, the title. You use this quote all the time. What should we do? What does that mean when you talk about that?
Well, you know, it's centered around the creating expectation, right? I would say a professional winds up getting the project done. Makes sense? Whether you're a professional plumber, you're a professional doctor, whether you're a professional radio pitchman, you know, somebody comes to you looking for a podcast, you know, it's like, well, here's how we do the podcast, or here's how we do Service MVP service, or here's how we do plumbing. And then you show them how we do it and what the benefit of doing it is. And then you say at the end of it, well, I'm ready to get started on this project. So what should we do? And so people will be like, I got to think about it, Jim. Sure. Take all the time you need. I'll stay right here. What should we do? Yeah, but it is a lot of money. It's more money for a podcast than I thought it was going to be. I know, but this is the podcast that is built around your service, built around your client, so your client can learn about your company. This is really for your client, not for me. So what should we do, right? I can't believe it costs that much for a water heater. I know, but I did this for your family because I want your family to be happy. So what should we do? You know, so really, it's like what you're going to learn in the book is that trademark phrase, you know, which has been borrowed truthfully from other people, like, you know, the new flat rate uses it. And you know, I trained the Rodney Coop and Matt Coop and those type of things back in the day. And there's a lot of people who have benefited from the training. I definitely want them to use it because every time they do use it, people think all roads lead to Uncle Joe. You know, so that's one of the things that I benefit from is the legacy of using those words, Jim. And it has served me very well and has definitely become my trademark in a way.
What should we do? Go to Amazon, get the book, get Audible. I like to listen myself, so I'm an Audible kind of guy.
I would just get all three. I would get the hardcover.
Yeah.
get the hardcover, get the Audible because you want to listen to it, right, in your car or your truck, and then get the Kindle or whatever too, so you can, sure, you can listen to it on your iPhone when you're bored, just sitting around in line at the DMV or whatever. And now you got something to listen to or to read if you want to, beside the normal news and stuff like that, Jim. So definitely, I would recommend any one of the formats. It's interesting because when I listen to it. I read it or listen to it, I consume it differently. It's interesting how it has a different effect on me when I read the hardcover or if I listen to the book. It's got a different effect on me because each one has a different angle in a way. Does it make sense? The way it's presented?
It does. And I have a recommendation. After you get the book, the physical book, put it in your suitcase because you'll run into Joe at a conference somewhere and he'll sign it for you.
Definitely. Always carry the book with you at all times, and then bring it to me when just catch me down in the hallway somewhere or when I'm having breakfast, and I'll stop my breakfast, and I'll get my little Sharpie I carry with me now everywhere, Jim. I can't go without this.
Yep.
And I'll go ahead and give you a personal message, and also we'll take a selfie together and make it a what should we do experience for everybody who seeks me out.
What should we do? We should go to Amazon, get the book, and write a review. Thank you so much, Joe. I appreciate you being on the program today.
Jim, thanks for being a big fan of ours, and definitely you've done so much for us. I really appreciate everything you do to serve the contractors and other people in the trades. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you.
Entrepreneurship got the inspiration. Yeah, now I'm just doing it. Working on these projects. My ideas I'm pursuing. No matter what the problem, the solution, I'm proving it. Let's talk about it. And open up the dialogue. Contractors telling their stories about how they got it started and how they keep it going. The passion fuels the mission. Now we blasted in the orbit. We gone. That's where we grow from. Started with the vision. Make the pitch and knock it out the park like home runs. We keep it moving. Self-belief, no doubt. Pass off the mic to my man's Jim Cloud.